Petso. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petso Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petso, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Petso Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petso.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. I'm Dave Petso, of course, and this is a recording here. I will be live in the second hour, so look forward to visiting with you then and taking your questions. And we have got several email questions for this week, so it'll be an enjoyable and fast second hour. So stay tuned for that. But right now, I'm very pleased to welcome back John Deal, who's been I think John, you've been here a couple of times for us, and John's with the MIT lab and the Aging Lab, and so that's always interesting to me to what you guys are working on and what you're talking about. So MIT is also, of course, a bunch of brainiacs you guys are. And what are you guys working on? Because so many things are have to be happening with aging. Just everything you read, the science, are just pushing back the boundaries of aging. And so share with us what you guys are working on right now.
Sure, Dave. Well, thanks. And, you know, as I think about the studies that the folks at the MIT Age Lab are doing, and one of the roles with the company I work with, Hartford Funds, is to kind of define that research. And one of the things we see changing is just changes brought about by extending longevity. So today in the United States, for example, if I have two people, age 65 and married, there is now, it's what we call the rule of 63-36. There's a 63% chance that one of the two will live to age 90, and there's a 36% chance that one of the two will live to age 95. And I probably don't have to share with the ladies who that is likely to be.
Right.
But given that kind of longevity, as we think about traditional quote-unquote retirements compared to what retirements will be in the future, it's not just that we're living longer. We'll be living better given medical advances, given new technologies and devices that will help us age. And so we're studying the impact of longer life on industries, companies, services, products, all the kind of things that we're going to desire as we move forward.
Right. Now one of the things that pops up all the time when we're talking to clients, right, just day to day, is, I don't want to live to be 100. But yet we see a lot of people that are, and we're just, the science is, of course, it's unbelievable how long people are going to be living, and the boundaries just keep getting pushed back. People say that, but the reality is people seem to fight for every last breath, don't they?
It's true. No one wants to live until 100, until you're 99 and a half, right?
So right.
It varies all the way. We always joke and say, how old is old? It typically is about 3 years older than I am right now.
Yeah, right.
But the interesting thing is, because we're living so much longer, it's changing the conversation around how we're going to be living, and it actually changes some of the questions that we should be asking ourselves, either about ourselves or about a loved one that we care about.
Mm-hmm.
And these questions aren't necessarily restricted to the financial markets, if you will. They all have financial ties, but sometimes they're not directly about portfolio allocations or income streams.
Right. Then, of course, a lot of people, when they come in and visit with us, they want to talk about the financial aspect because, frankly, that's the easy part, isn't it?
It is.
That's the easy discussion. We could run mathematical formulas to say you can retire. But then people walk into retirement, and they're really not emotionally ready to retire, losing a circle of friends and all those types of things. So let's kind of maybe focus today on that. That's probably a better discussion with you anyway, is are those more difficult types of decisions that people make? What, along those same lines, when you're talking about, you talk about, like, who's going to change our light bulbs and things like that. So,
sure.
Why don't you share some of your interesting thoughts you guys are working on?
Sure. So I'll talk about a couple of questions. The MIT Age Lab says there are three questions we should be asking ourselves that are predictive of a future quality of life. But I just want to bring up for a second, because you actually mentioned it, this whole concept of work. You know, we asked about 30,000 Americans all across the United States four questions. We asked them the year of their birth, their zip code, because from zip code you can get all the socioeconomic data that you need, their gender, and then importantly, tell me two things that you envision doing after age 65. Hmm. And if you're already 65, just bump it out a couple more years. And your audience may find it interesting. Travel obviously came up quite a bit.
Sure.
Most post-retirees tell us they travel, but not as much as they thought they would prior to retirement. But interesting, what popped into the conversation was work, but not work in the same form or fashion as the first 20 or 30 years. Maybe working for a nonprofit or working for a cause I believe in or working part-time. And it's not necessarily only financial in nature. For many of us, work is our primary social contact with other folks.
Right.
And the problem we face today is that if we retire in our early 60s, maybe it takes us 2 or 3 years to start knocking some of those things off our bucket list. Mm-hmm. But now we have 18 years that we need to fill with what?
Right.
So the three questions that are predictive of future quality of life, they're kind of lighthearted in a way, but they bring serious issues. One question is, who will change your light bulbs? It deals with the normal housing and maintenance issues that many of us will face as we age. The average American home was built in 1975, and it is aging as well as its occupants. How many of us have spent even 30 or 40 minutes thinking about the services or modifications that may need to be made to our homes in order to make them livable into our mid-80s or mid-90s? These are the kind of things that never matter until they matter. And yes, they have financial implications. And I always tell folks, it's better to think about it and perhaps plan for it as we look ahead. Things like handyman services, things like home modification, for example, level entryways, wider doorways, kitchen and bath improvements to make things easier to reach, so on and so forth. By the way, all the top 10 home improvements meant to prevent one thing in the home. Falling.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because a fall can change the picture in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
And so as we think about these kind of things, the other thing that we need to think about, Dave, is that many of the tradespeople that we've relied on, electricians and roofers and plumbers, one of the aspects of aging is that those people that we've relied on for all those years may begin to age out of the professions.
Right.
And so the people we've relied on may need to be replaced. How do we begin to form trusted relationships with service providers that, again, will help us stay in our home if that's our desire?
It's an interesting point. You think about how I own the building that we're in and how we take up half the building, but it's amazing how much other little work there is, right? A light goes out. Now I need an electrician, or I need to learn to change a ballast myself. So all of these decisions, you're trying to find people that you are comfortable with. I've had that building for 2 years. I finally found an electrician that actually showed up.
That's right.
Because they don't always show up.
That's right.
You think people want work, and then but they sometimes don't show up. So it is a very interesting point. I want to dive into this a little bit deeper, because I am seeing a lot of this planning forward with my clients.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing it. So somewhere the word is getting out, because people who are still getting around, or when they move, they build homes to grow old in.
Right? For sure.
Which, to your point, wide doorways, a bathtub they can get in and out of if they're disabled.
Even taking an honest look at your housing and saying, look, I can tell you, in the home that I live in Pennsylvania, all the bedrooms are on the second floor, all the bathrooms on the second floor. As my wife and I considered where we would be longer term, as much as we love the home we're in, it was clear to us it was not going to accommodate us as we age. And we need to be thinking now about a lifespan that is going to cover to age 85, 90, 95 years old. The home that served us well in one stage of our life may not be the home or even the housing arrangement. What we're seeing now is perhaps you see them in this area, Dave, where these giant multiplexes are popping up. There's movie theaters and retailers and restaurants. And if you look really closely, what else is there? Condominium units, right, that aren't being purchased by college kids. They're being bought by folks age 50 to 70 who say, you know what, I love this area, but 3 months of the year, I'm going to be either chasing my grandchildren or chasing my dreams. And it's kind of a nice idea to be able to think about turning out the lights, locking the door, and disappearing for 3 months, showing up 3 months later, unlock the door, turn the lights on, and it looks exactly like it looked when I left. And by the way, when I'm there, it's got everything that I need. There are restaurants and entertainment, people around day and night. I mean, it's this is kind of the new phase that we're looking at in terms of socializing as we get older.
Yeah, interesting, interesting. Now, let's go on to the second one, and that's you know, who we're going to have lunch with, right?
So who we're going to have lunch with deals with your social network, and not just the one online, like the one where we meet real people and have real conversations.
Do people have those?
Believe it or not, they still do.
Wow.
I think they become even more important as we age, believe it or not.
The only ones I see with those relationships are older people, actually, right? The youngsters are texting each other as they sit across the room.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And one of the keys to that is your social network will do two really important things for you. It's your social network that will get you up off the couch, out the door, and physically moving, giving you a place to be and a place to go. And secondly, it's your social network that will keep you mentally stimulated and challenged with new people, relationships, and opportunities.
Right. Now, that it seems so very popular. I run into this with clients because we talk about this on a financial basis. It's always smarter to go rent that winter home. Yeah, you know, you have to worry about it, you have to get up, so on. But they miss community. Those people that actually have a place, they go down to Palm Springs, whatever, wherever it is, they move into the same people, and they have this huge social circle. Huge. In fact, their social circle there is multiples what it is here.
Right.
Because this is where they have a good social circle, yes, but not like there where all they're doing is playing.
Right, right.
Right? So you think about that, and people are willing to spend great amounts of money to create that social network.
Well, and the other thought is we think about who we're going to age with and what we're going to be doing. Let's say that you were a successful small business owner or, you know, whatever your career, you were very successful in it. And then one day you say, you know, that's it, I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the question is, what does a Tuesday look like 2 years from now? Right? What do we fill our time with? And what we find is many people do find causes that they believe in to become attached to. Now, the big thing that people want in those retirement years is time flexibility. I want to be able to do the things I want to do when I can do them. But if I can contribute to a cause, if I can give my efforts, remember, donation is more than just money. It's time and talent as well. And what's interesting is what people often want to hear about is, what are other people like me doing?
Mm-hmm.
What are other people who we see who are successful? What are they doing to fill that time? How are they leveraging the skills and the talents that they've accumulated over a lifetime? And because let's face it, when we're 65, 70, 75 years old, the difference today is that you're going to remain energetic, you're going to remain productive, and you know, society needs a lot of the skills that exist out there today. How are we going to get involved? Because maintaining that social network is crucially important.
And continuing to have a sense of purpose, right?
Absolutely.
You know, somewhere, church, something.
Yes, and that again, whether it's a faith community, whether it's hobbies or entertainment or even education. Like, I think if anyone is involved in the higher education, you may find that one of the fastest growing segments of enrollees at colleges and universities is your above age 50 segment. And they're not enrolling for degree programs. They're enrolling in classes that interest them that maybe didn't align with their professional choices earlier in their career, so on and so forth.
Right, right. Good, good. You know, I think about this and use this analogy with my clients a lot, and I wondered what your thoughts were about this. I like to play golf, so but I don't want to play every day, right? You know, I don't. I would be very boring. But men typically, when they get to retirement, they go, again, it's just a financial thing. And so I use this analogy, and I say, look, you know, you get four guys that go to show up on the first tee, and they don't know each other. By the second, third hole, each one of those guys knows what the other person either did for a living or does. Now, we don't care how many kids you have or what's going on there. Women are the opposite, right? They're going to be all about their family and their circle. You know, my kids and my kids are doing this. Typically. Now, what do men do? They don't, you know, if we don't address that issue on a mental basis, you are now retiring from where you gather all of your identity.
Absolutely.
Into what?
That's,
you need to find a new identity, don't you?
That's the question. That's exactly right. And again, it is so different given that longevity that we spoke about earlier, because I have an opportunity in my second 30 years to create something very different than I did in my first 40 or 50 years. And so, you know, what will that be, and what will be important, and how can I feel like I'm contributing and a part of something? That's often how we define ourselves through the careers that we've built to the point of quote-unquote retirement. But interestingly, the word retire is kind of disappearing from our dialogue, and people are more and more starting to talk about what's next.
And it needs to disappear, because people are living so long, and we can't just be sitting around or, frankly, playing golf every day and having cocktails all afternoon and then take a nap and who knows, right?
Yes.
Watch TV. That doesn't sound like much of a life.
No. In fact, I sat next to a gentleman on an airplane not long ago who told me that he tried to retire two or three times. But the first time he thought he would play golf 3 days a week. But as it turned out, he said, you know, I wound up in the 19th hole watching Oprah for 2 hours a day. Said 2 years of that, I'll get anybody back working again.
Yeah, they turned into something they don't want to be. All right, we got to take a quick break, John. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo. This is a special recording. And again, I'm here with John Diehl, who's been with MIT's Aging Lab. And just enjoy you coming through and spending some time and just telling us what the cutting edge is, because that cutting edge is just changing all the time. It's I've enjoyed and shared with this audience for the last couple of years about a book that really caught my attention called Abundance, and it talks so much about and got to see the gentleman speak and kind of update it as well. But the technology and how exponential it's changing our lives. And not just technology that, we're living longer, but we're living longer exponentially. People who are retiring today, we have a 30-year life expectancy based on yesterday or today's science, which is getting these numbers are going to be changing as we go. All those implications in society, we think financial because we can run the numbers and say we're all going to die. We don't have enough money and all those things. But it brings up some very interesting things, and that's what you guys are doing, right? And in the first segment, we talked about maintaining our homes and what that's going to look like long term, what our social circle looks like. What's the third thing, the third big question you all are talking about?
So the third question, Dave, is how will we get an ice cream cone? And when I say that, it's really two questions built into one. The first question is, do you even like ice cream? Here's what I want you to think about. What are those small things that make life worth living that as you age you want to make sure to maintain access to? And the reason we ask this, and by the way, they usually have something to do with these four categories. Usually has something to do with where we were educated. That could be college or university, could be armed services, could be vocational training, but that's a big part of our identity and maybe a big part of our social circle. Where do I recreate? What do I like to do? Where do I congregate with other people? And where do I donate? Both not just money, but also time and talent. So educate, recreate, congregate, and donate. If I think about those things, it's probably going to begin to define those things I want to remain attached to as I age. And the reason we ask the question the way we do, how will you get an ice cream cone, is that the one factor here that everybody seems to take for granted until we're faced with it face-to-face is our ability to drive, our ability to access these things that are so important to us. So as we start to think about where we're going to age and how we're going to age, we need to begin to think about the things that energize us that we need to maintain access to. And oftentimes I'm asked, because the MIT Age Lab and actually our parent company, the Hartford Insurance Company, has done a lot of work on aging drivers. And driving is something that doesn't matter until it matters.
Right.
And maybe to ease into this whole topic of what if I'm never able to drive? Well, what if instead I live in a community where driving is a luxury, not a necessity? And, Dave, I would share with you some of the fastest-growing populations of Americans age 65-plus in the United States are forming around college and university environments.
Interesting.
They have culture. They have sports. They also, though, generally have better-developed health networks, teaching hospitals, clinics, and the like. And if they don't have walkable access to a lot of the things we want to enjoy, mm-hmm. they oftentimes have better systems of public transportation, which may allow us to access those things in some way should we lose the ability to drive. So, again, another piece of the puzzle is, where do I want to age? And will I have access to the people and the things that energize me?
Right. Now, if you live in a more rural area, and of course Boise's not that, but Idaho is that, mm-hmm. On the outskirts, what are folks doing in those communities to address some of these issues? Or are they just do their best and get by like they have for years? Is there anything happening in more rural areas?
In the rural areas, I think we need to look more for the senior support services that are available in those areas. But to be honest with you, Dave, it is a challenge because Idaho is not alone. The majority of Americans still live in rural locations. Hmm. And if we have an opportunity and if we have time on our side to begin to think about what it looks like, and maybe I'm not always tied to the home that I'm in, if relocation is a possibility at some point in the future, it's something that does need to be considered. But more often than not, it's seeking out the transportation services in particular mm-hmm. that can help me access some of those things that I may need. Or, as we talked about earlier, the trusted service providers, be they caregiving services, be they handyman services, so on and so forth, that can help us get by.
You know, it strikes me in some of these communities where you see it even in Boise, in the hospitals where they've got, you know, an eye from some location in Boise, but that eye is also can be turned on while you're up in some of the remote areas. For us, it'd be like a council where they have a small hospital, but there's no way they can fully staff with expertise and heart surgeons and things like that, so they can monitor and do that. I would assume on a medical basis that that's just going to continue to become better and better remote services for those communities.
Very much so. And I would also say that as we live and age in our homes, we're going to find that the number of devices that are used in the home, devices used now, I carefully use the word monitor, but there are some cases where if we're living alone in a more rural location, we have family somewhere, I'm not going to say right down the road, but maybe right. within proximity if we need them. Well, you know, it's kind of moving past the pressing the alert button.
Right.
We need things in our homes that are going to detect our activity or perhaps even detect a fall in the home to let someone know that something's going on needs to be checked out. So, yes, those kind of interactive services, not only in the medical field, but also within the home, I think are going to become a bigger and bigger deal.
Well, just as we're talking, just, you know what, this week, 2 days ago, Apple unveils its watch, which we all, you know, can't even imagine what it'll be looking like 4 or 5 years from now, but already you'll be with that. They announced all kinds of new medical technology that's going to be hooked to it, monitoring for heart, falls, all those things, all with just a watch. And
being able to anticipate medical conditions
right.
before they actually happen to us
yeah.
that can be analyzed by our doctors or our adult caregivers, absolutely, I think, the wave of the future.
Yeah, I imagine that your watch goes, your alarm goes off. Oh, it's not waking me up. It's telling me I could be having a heart problem.
Right. Yeah, something is going on out of the ordinary based on my typical pattern of living. These are the kind of things that we may be able to sense ahead of time moving
right.
forward.
Right, and again, exponentially, we're going to get better and better and better at this. I found that very interesting. As an aside, one of the more interesting things about the whole watch announcement was the new integrating of all the healthcare that they're right. doing. I can't remember what they called that, but
and is it a medical device or is it a
no? It's a collaboration,
right? And
well,
so that,
right,
but
right.
those are the questions that
yeah.
we're wrestling with, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, it'd be fascinating. All right. Well, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about more on the technology side, and also looking at how far out this technology maybe pushing the boundaries of life expectancies and things like that. So, anyway, we're here with John Dale, and we got to take a break here for Fox News. Hope you'll stick around, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo here with John Deal, who is with the MIT Aging Lab and also the Hartford Funds, Hartford Insurance Company. And so you travel around the country and talk with various people about what's going on in the world of aging, which is a fascinating discussion to me because on our side of things, it's twofold. We're obviously trying to bring peace, financial peace, to people in a very unpeaceful world. So I want to talk about two aspects of that in your studies, and that is how do people in such a fast-paced world, how do seniors slow down enough to not be overwhelmed by the fire hose of data that comes at them every single day? They're not used to it. You know, we grew up with a newspaper on the porch, and before that, people hardly ever cared that much, right? I always like to give out this little tidbit, but, you know, the nightly news was 15 minutes until Watergate. 15 mm-hmm. minutes. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk financial news 24/7 and worry about our pile of money. So let's talk a little bit about that, as far as that goes, and the technology and how that's impacting people.
Sure, Dave. So if we think about it, while we're living longer, our time horizons are actually shortening. I mean, for many people, long term now, it's hard to think past next year.
Right.
You know, long term used to be 10 years, 15 years. Not anymore, because we live in a society where now information is ubiquitous, and by that, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be on the nightly news, as you mentioned, or in the morning newspaper. But now it's on our desktop, it's in our pocket, it's on our wrist, we're surrounded by it. And today's consumer, especially the aging consumer, is now faced with what we call an increase in volume, velocity, and complexity of issues, which is really making it hard to make decisions. And let me explain a little bit about what I mean by that. The volume of issues that we face. We may now be living in four-generation households, and perhaps providing care both up and down the generational spectrum. In other words, we may be caring for aging parents at the same time as we're raising grandchildren, sometimes even in our own homes.
Right.
The volume of those issues and the number of things that we have to think about on a daily basis and manage on a daily basis, from our work to our family to our faith, obviously you can fill in those bubbles. It's exploding. Add to that the velocity at which it's coming at us. Dave, I always like to ask, what year did people think that the Apple iPhone was introduced into the U.S. market? It was January of 2007. Technology's only been around 7 or 8 years, and yet it's changed everything from the way we communicate to the way we gather information, we evaluate products and services. And what was every technological innovation since the washing machine going to do for us? Was going to create all this leisure time that we would have to contemplate and think about what the future would look like. And is that what happened? No, we've just put more and more and more into our days. And then lastly, compounded by the complexity in the world in which we live today. By complexity, I always like to say, just when you thought you knew all the answers, they changed the questions, right? Just when you thought your blood pressure was in a manageable range, they changed the standard.
Mm-hmm.
You learned how to eat my food pyramid. It's not a food pyramid. It's my plate. So new research brings, is it healthy to drink coffee, red wine, or you name it? Or is it not healthy? It changes on a daily basis.
Yep.
And so the amount of information that we're now inundated with has actually made it harder to make decisions. In fact, this is one of the reasons I'm sure, Dave, you see, but I see that folks want to talk to financial advisors, for example, because there are headlines barraging us constantly. How do I cut through the clutter and determine what is really important to me? I can get all worked up about whatever today's headlines are, but what impact at the end of the day did they really have on me, my portfolio, and what it is that I'm trying to accomplish in my life? I think sometimes we can lose perspective. Mm-hmm. Remember that most crises pass in the United States because today's crisis is replaced by tomorrow's crisis, which oftentimes is more personal and puts things in better perspective than what we were worried about yesterday. So yes, that all that taking shape, and then we add to that, how will technology, you asked about technology, how will it impact the way we live? Well, technological advances from disease management to wearables, whether those are wearable undergarments or watches or wristbands or whatever they may be, all meant to monitor kind of how we're doing,
mm-hmm.
will drastically change. Not to mention some of the advances. I think I read an article just within the last month or two that the first prosthetics were being developed, which actually can be controlled by the mind, nerve impulses that are passed from the brain into these. The quality of life that we'll be able to experience an improvement in.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you've read, I think there are a couple of companies out there trying to develop a smart contact lens that would measure the blood glucose in your body through the tear fluid in your eye, transmit it to your phone or your watch or whatever, so that you can more accurately monitor. Look, if you were managing a chronic disease like diabetes, the quality of life that you may be able to improvement that you could experience mm-hmm. wearing a contact lens versus taking 4 or 5 needle sticks a day, you're going to want that technology. But from a financial standpoint, it's important to understand all of this that we talk about does eventually branch back to the financial.
Right.
Because many of those new technologies, my guess is, they're not going to be paid for by social insurance.
Right.
They'll need to be paid for out of pocket. And so when we talk to our financial advisors, thinking about the need for growth in a portfolio, thinking about limiting volatility because I'm never quite sure where I'm going to need, when and where I'll need that money, these are all the underlying considerations that go hand in hand with kind of creating that ideal picture of the future.
You know, it brings up an interesting point. We tell people that we need to nowadays be setting aside a pool of money for you and your family. And let's just pretend it's $50,000 to pay for when you have an eye problem. They put in a brand new eye. It's, you know, some kind of bionic eye.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that that will not, clearly can't be. Whether we like Obamacare or don't, government care everywhere always is rationed. I have to assume it's going to therefore be the case here as well. And if people are 85, 90 years old and want these things, well, I'm sorry, you're not part of the hive anymore. You're not a worker bee. Do you guys, you touched on that, and I just wanted to run it by. Do you feel that there's going to be many of these things on the healthcare side that people are going to have to pay for them by themselves?
Just a personal opinion, yeah, Dave, I do. Because, again, these technologies and therapeutic treatments are they're all developing. And even when we think about care options for dementia, Alzheimer's, so on and so forth, I think the numbers are getting close to, for Americans 85 and older, the incidence of Alzheimer's is now approaching 40%. 40% of us, if we're fortunate enough to make it to those ages, well, what are the technologies? What are the treatment centers? What are the options to help families cope with that disease? And I've been touched with that by that disease in my own family, and surely that there are financial issues from caregiving and devices, so on and so forth, but they pale in comparison many times to the emotional burden that the caregiver will be dealing with.
They are big issues. There's no doubt about that. Fortunately, medicine is making great strides these days, and so hopefully by the time we get there, John, we'll be able to take a pill and not have that happen.
That would sure would be nice.
If
yeah,
we,
I agree. Right.
God willing, get to be that old. But it is a frightening concept for a lot of people. But medicine has come a great deal. It's getting closer all the time.
For sure. I mean, mapping the human genome, right? And the biological revolution. Treatments for new types of cancers where the body's cells are being reprogrammed to fight those cancers internally. Immuno-oncology is what it's called. It's just it's a fascinating new area of study, and I think we've just begun to scratch the surface.
It's crazy. It really is. It's crazy how technology has advanced. And like you just pointed out, this is less than 10 years old, the iPhone, for crying out loud. It's just amazing. Just amazing. All right, we've got to take a quick break. Final segment upcoming. We'll talk some more about health and what's going on with the aging lab.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place to talk. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on 580 KITO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello and welcome to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo, of course, and I'm here with John Diehl. This is a recording. I will be right after this segment here. I'll be live with you, so hang on to your questions. But always, when you're coming through town, we just love to have you on and see what's going on at the Aging Lab at MIT. Now, we've talked about the technology. We've talked about who changes your light bulbs, how you maintain, where you're going to live as you get older. And I want to talk about the generational differences, how people communicate with their grandchildren. And you got to get on social media. I know. I got a flip phone. I don't ever want to text. Blah, blah, blah. Then you will not communicate with your great-grandchildren or your grandchildren.
You know, Dave, it's funny. People say that this generation is probably the least communicative of any generation. When I say this generation, the digital natives who won't know what the world was like without an internet. I would almost argue the other way in saying they may be one of the most communicative, but they do it in a different way. And the different generations and the way that generations approach technology and the way we develop trust. Interestingly, MIT says, the MIT Age Lab says, it may have a lot to do with what's called cohort theory. And what cohort theory says is a lot of who we are in terms of, you know, the cars we like to drive, the music we prefer, the what's cheap, what's expensive, we're all formed between the ages of approximately 17 and 22 years old. If we want to understand what has really shaped our worldview in terms of trust or economic outlook, so on and so forth, we can think to those formative years, and we can think to what the economy was like, how it impacted our families, what we're afraid of now because of what was going on during those years, and especially important, what were the technologies that were in use at the time? So when we think today about people in their 70s and 80s, coming of age in I'll call it the golden period of the American experience, victory in World War II, GI Bill, families growing, education growing, trust in the United States never higher. Mm-hmm. What you find is every successive generation thereafter comes with lower and lower trust levels in all areas of trust, government, corporate America, experts, celebrities. In fact, if you were around the 1960s, remember that popular slogan, trust no one over 30?
Right.
Now that we're all over 30, we've just truncated it to trust no one.
Yeah.
But there is still one group that we do still trust, and it's other people like me, right? So if I can learn from other people like me, and this is where I would say for people who are aging, who aren't used to these new technologies, you know, try and latch on to someone who is using the technology. Just understand how they're using it. Somebody who bought a new iPad. Someone who just learned to text. Because honestly, and I can tell you in my own experience, I have three children. And if their grandparents are going to wait for us to bring them over for the typical traditional family meal on Sunday,
yeah,
probably isn't going to happen. Because believe it or not, in order to play in those baseball games and soccer games and all the things that we did as kids, they're now taking up all of the time on the weekends. And so what we find is if you want to be a part of that generation, we kind of have to go where they are.
Yeah.
We have to go to the dance recitals and the you name it. But that's changing. And if we don't adopt the technology that they're using, we run the risk of being a little less relevant. And that's why we've got to understand how they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, and it is we just have different things. People don't have books anymore. They've got readers and iPads, and that's where you get a lot of stuff. And I was pleased to recently, get onto Facebook. Well, I don't take selfies and post that I'm now having talking with you, and I'm trying hard to Twitter and all these things because that's what you should be doing to communicate. But at least I can go on. I don't have to say a lot, but I can go see my brand new grandbaby.
Yeah.
And I can see 16 pictures a day,
right?
Because they're, there, she's really cute this way when she sleeps and that way and all that. But you really feel much more connected if you're not on there.
And you can use a technology like Twitter to follow, if you will, people that you find interesting that maybe that it can be a source of new ideas, new, experiences, so on and so forth. It connects us with other people like us, which is who we tend to trust.
Now, that brings up an interesting thing because, okay, so maybe this is a little out of the area, but I just want to spitball it with me a little bit here. So we're connecting only with people that think the way I do. Isn't that going to make a smaller world ultimately? John?
Yes and no. It is. And where you see it most effectively used, Dave, is in media, right? Because
right.
We used to have, three channels, two
yep.
channels, whatever it was. Now we find so many media outlets that are tailored to the way that we think. I do think that we do have to make an effort at least to expose ourselves to ideas on the other side of the fence.
Yep.
Look, at the end of the day, we may disagree.
Yeah.
But perhaps in there we understand a little bit more about why we feel the way we do, or every once in a while,
right.
we may figure out that we don't have it all figured out. Maybe there's a better idea out there.
Right, right. Well, it just strikes me that you can tailor your news down to the point that all you're doing is having confirmation bias, that in fact, yes, the world is going to end, and I can prove it right here.
Yeah, and that's same with our social networks. Getting in amongst people that think differently than we do is actually kind of energizing.
Yep.
And exposes us to new ideas.
Yeah, it's very, very, very true. All right, let's talk about another thing that's kind of popping up here. Artificial intelligence is making some pretty amazing inroads. I just saw this. I just saw a taping that's so 2 years ago now. But these were the two greatest Jeopardy champions got whacked by a computer. I mean, it wasn't even close,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw this, and this is 2 years ago. Imagine how well, what is it, Watson? Is that the computer
right.
at IBM?
Right.
I think they call it Watson. How good...
Welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions only, not the station, not the broker-dealer. And, of course, we're not here to tell you what to buy, and sell. We'll talk about individual companies from time to time, just usually generally to as an example. You know, I'll talk about Apple here in a minute. And because it's just, to me, is a learning lesson for what we've been discussing. But I don't know your portfolio. I don't know what your risk tolerance is, what you're trying to do. So the idea that you should be buying and selling stocks is crazy. And, of course, as you know, the greats, I mean, the truly great investors don't trade. Right? They buy great companies and hold them long term. That may not play well for media. So you've been holding this company for 7 years. What do you think? We're going to keep holding it. Okay, you can't flip it over and do something. No, we're good. We're good. Doesn't make for good media. Doesn't make for good Wall Street, right? They need the action, moving money. Traders need stocks to move. Wall Street needs commissions for trading. So it doesn't play well that people should be buying and holding, but we know we should. Every study done shows that. It shows it so big. It was very interesting. A big time manager was interviewed last week. You know, one of those 80-year-old guys that's been around forever. And he kind of wanted to leave everybody his final, thoughts. So what's the biggest, most important piece of advice? Don't trade so much. That's it. Wasn't, read more annual reports. Look at more Condor spread options. Buy into the fear-based products that promise stock market returns with no risk. Didn't say any of that. Don't trade so much. Interesting. In a world that drives people to trade. One piece of advice. Very curious. So, I've been on this kick, if you will. The kick is this question, right? The question is, what's right in the world? And with the interview with John Deal, I think a lot of those things come to light, and I would like to hear from you. Again, what do you think is right in the world, besides my beautiful granddaughter? Right? What's right in the world? Your grandkids? Yeah, that's okay. It's a good starting place. But we're talking investment, right? For any touchy-feely nonsense, grandkids, blah, blah, blah. But think about this. We talked about it, Apple, a lot. Not because you need to go buy Apple, but Apple's a great example of two things. People that talk too much about a stock rather than the company. And they blab about it, you know, oh, it just can't do any better, margins can't get any better, this is probably the peak. For billions of dollars of market capitalization, the peak has been discussed. Keeps rolling. But one of the things that I think is interesting when in investing is that people think that they're being, I don't know, what would you want to say, wise, when they're being cautious and careful, not getting carried away. And, of course, you don't want to get carried away. That this company is going to make a fortune with this brand new widget. Of course not. But we likewise don't need to be scared out of every single investment all the time. When it's just simply doing good. And when we think of what's going on with Apple and we think about, oh, the new iWatch, and so all the pundits go on TV, and they did, and say what a big deal it's not. It's just fill in the blanks, right? You have to have an iPhone. It's just another device that you really don't need because the phone does all of these things. Okay. And so therefore what? We should probably sell the stock and it's all going to be bad, just like the iPhone 4 and 5 and 6 was not a big deal. The iPad, what? Who would need that? When we constantly look for the negative, I mean, it's just a constant struggle to set aside anything good that's happening, then we miss what's right in the world, too. And I'm not just speaking Apple, but I'm saying what financially are we doing to undermine our own ability to see what's right? See what's right about companies, right about businesses, right about investing in general. It's hard enough to get people to see that market prices that bounce around really don't matter unless you're buying and selling at that time. It's hard enough to keep people focused on what's important. Very hard. We all know that, right? You know? So if we're not thinking about what's right in the world, then we wind up often missing investment opportunities in great companies because we go with whatever negative flow that there is. Here's what, if you stop and you think about what's right in the world technology-wise, and I mean technology and health, then things are different when you think about the iWatch. You don't think about it as, well, what's it going to do this quarter? How many people want new fashion statement of an Apple Watch? Like all it was going to do is tell time. Or, okay, well, it takes calls, but who cares? I've got a phone. But when you start to think about what they're doing, what they've already done with their new health kit that's tied to this watch, they have 50,000 people signed up for a cardiovascular study. The watch isn't even out yet. But we're connecting with each other to have massive amounts of data available to the brightest researchers in the country, and it would have taken years to get 50,000 people and 50 different health clinics to do the study. not 50,000 people before you even launch the product. Imagine what it's going to do for diabetics. Imagine what it's going to do for people who have blood disorders, heart conditions, people who live, as we talked with John Deal last hour, in remote locations and can be monitored. And if they fall down, we know it. They aren't just in their houses until hopefully somebody comes by before they die. We can monitor and know, hey Dave, you know what? I don't like what's going on right now with your heart. You may be having a heart attack. Get to the hospital now. Amazing stuff. But, you know, when we think about it, we just don't think big enough about any of these things. And so what's right in the world is very important to all investment, not so you go buy Apple. I don't know how much money they're going to make on any of this. I only use it as a point that everybody's so quick to decide whether it's the top of a company or not. Or it's really important to this quarter, and we miss the long-term perspective. I honestly, I'm not only not talking about Apple as an investment. I'm saying this is amazing when all we think about, this is no big deal. It's a huge deal to mankind. Whether they make money or not, it's a different story. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll figure it out, contrary to what the critics say. As far as that goes, too, I want to quickly share an email that came in. I was appreciative of your comments Saturday about what is good in the world. I know that U.S. growth is perhaps not where we want it to be, that there is a lot of underemployment. To a certain extent, underemployment is a separate, albeit troublesome, issue. As you correctly pointed out, U.S. companies are doing well for the most part, and their share prices show that. That's why those people who chose to invest new money or keep existing money in those markets during the depth of the crisis have been rewarded. So what's good in the world? The American economy is what's good in the world. Associated with that, as you also mentioned, is our creative destruction way of doing business. It boosts productivity. It leads to better returns on capital. Is it always convenient for workers? No. But it certainly helps guarantee that we are working on what needs to be done, on the right products, not dragging the economy down, not dragging wealth creation down, with so much useless effort that, excuse me, Look at Europe. It's getting better there, but the EU social charter is really proving to be a problem for much of the business there. Boy, it sure has for decades, hasn't it? The liberal left should understand that destruction of wealth also destroys the source of capital for many of their beloved causes and projects. But I fear that many don't understand that. And they don't. I totally agree with you. I don't think they do at all. I absolutely guarantee you this president does not. As several advisors who have left the office have indicated, there's no there. There's nothing there. You know, you talk economics and they have these glassy eyes. They have no idea. None whatsoever. And nobody in the White House at all with any experience. I visited Greece last year and I saw things that reminded me of the former Soviet Union, where I've also traveled. Out away from Athens, there were lots of shuttered businesses and shops, tons of them. Why do you think this was? Of course, it was due to the drag in the economy of an overgrown, bloated government sector. They are painfully dealing with it now, or at least trying to deal with it. But then people will say, look at Germany and their social system and safety nets. To that, I would say the Germans were fiscally responsible in the past, and they can afford it. That isn't true of the United States. Dave in Boise. Dave, thank you for your email. Thanks for taking the time. It was very thoughtful. Well thought out, so I do appreciate it. And I appreciate the thought of the U.S. economy is what's right in the world. It is. And we have many problems, as you point out, and our social net is a huge unfunded problem, certainly underfunded by massive amounts, that we are going to have to deal with, but the economy is good. Thank you very much for your email. And also, if you want to email us today, it's Dave at Petso Financial, P-E-T-S-O, financial.net. What's right in the world, besides my beautiful granddaughter? What's right in the world to you? That's the question. What's right? And why? Because it helps us invest better. It helps us stay invested. It helps us stay focused on the positive. It helps us stay focused on the best investments and not shaken because of a little tremor here or there. Those are inevitable. We need to stay in the game. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, do give us a call at 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. Idaho's place to talk. This is Money Matters with Dave Petso on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome back. And we are live after a wonderful time with John Deal. Just a terrific. We really enjoy John a lot. He's been coming through Boise for several years, working with Hartford and working with the MIT lab, and always stops by to at least have dinner with us at the office, and we've had him with clients several times. So it's just really a terrific, fun, enjoyable guy. So hope you enjoyed the MIT Aging Lab's insight into growing old in the future. Right now, I want to jump into something that I've been asked this question. You know, I talk about compliance a lot. You know, like what I can say and what I can't say, that's compliance, what you can do and what you can't do. And there's a lot of different things to this. So I really will have to break this into a couple different segments, maybe even, just a big segment in a future. But I did want to touch on it because we do talk about it a lot. You know, why can't I say, you talk about, say, a specific mutual fund? Well, there are rules that are put out there. Some are good rules and some are just off the charts dumb. But that's what bureaucrats do. They create mostly stupid rules with the idea that they're trying to help something, which is why we end up with prospectuses nobody reads, because you can't understand any of that. Only a bureaucrat could come up with over 1 million words in a tax code. You see what I mean? Only a bureaucrat can come up with prospectuses that are hundreds of pages long and think that that helps people and that we need more disclosure of some kind in legalese that nobody can read or understand what they're getting into. Only bureaucrats think that way. Only bureaucrats think that the more rules we create, the better it is for consumers. Well, of course it's not, but that's the way bureaucrats think. So with that in mind, as you look at some of the rules that there are there, there's nothing we can do about it. It's just it is just a simple bureaucratic nonsense. But there's typically a reason to some of them, and that's where we try to define for people, this is why it's important to work, say, for example, with a CFP. There's an additional layer of conduct, ethical behavior that's required, or you lose your CFP. You have to disclose certain things. You simply can't say certain things. And when we talk about it, for example, compliance, if you are a non-licensed person, you can basically say, hey, you can get stock market returns without stock market risk if you're not licensed. Now, I don't know why somebody would want to do business with somebody who wasn't licensed, but they can certainly say that if they're not licensed. You say, well, I have licenses, or they have licenses. Yes, they have an insurance license. And so you have a different level of compliance in certain areas. Insurance, I believe, at least the state of Idaho insurance, if you don't shoot somebody, you don't rape them or shoot them, I don't think you can lose your license. I think you're free to basically say anything you want to say. Because I certainly don't see people losing their license for saying things like you can get stock market returns without stock market risk when that's not true. They can say things like that. But if you are FINRA licensed, which is securities licensed, Series 7 is what I am. There is also a Series 6, which is means you can't do stocks. You can't do you can only do mutual funds. That's what that is. But anyway, if you have a FINRA or a securities license, right there you can't say those things. That's not compliant because it's not true. And so there are a couple of rules that are pretty good on compliance. I would say the rule is don't do business with people that are not licensed. I think that's a no-brainer, but I think it needs to be said because there's a whole lot of people running around out there, including CPAs, selling this packaged garbage to people. We saw one the other day that was licensed, so we suggested that the folks ask about or talk to FINRA about it because they were in one of those big packaged products of, stock market returns without risk. Compliance is important in the sense that you understand what it is people can say and what your areas are, what areas you need to be careful in. We think a lot of the rules are pretty silly, right? You in order to open up an account, you have to initial 15 different pages and sign 5 other places. So people don't read any of it. It's nonsensical. But understanding that people have licenses that they can lose, that there are places to check, FINRA broker check is one. You can link to FINRA broker check through our website to check on anybody that has a FINRA license, which, again, if their name doesn't come up, they don't have a license. And once again, I ask, why would you do business with people that don't have to play by the rules? Our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Perhaps you have a more specific question about it, about why we can't talk about things like municipal bonds. Well, we can, if you ask a question. We can talk about those things, but I can't come out and talk broadly about them. There are some weird rules. I can't talk about specific mutual funds, and annuities are very tricky. But if people ask, we can talk about them. So that's when we have an opportunity to discuss them. And we don't talk about specific companies because of the list of disclosures that you have to give are silly. But we'll keep talking about it. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. I'd love to talk with you right now. What is right in your world? What's right in the world that we need to keep in mind when we're investing? And we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's on 580-KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436 is our number. We're a little fired up. We're having fun. I'm having fun with my beautiful granddaughter and just thinking about what's right in the world, and that's not hard when you see her, right? We're talking about what's right. It's important. It is important. It's important to set that correct attitude when we're thinking about the world we are investing in. And right now, let's go to the phone. I'd love to hear from you. 580-KIDO. Let's go to Steve from Emmett. Steve, thanks for listening. Go ahead, please.
I'd like to hear you talk about active fund management.
Yeah, you mean like versus passive?
Yes.
Okay, Steve,
as opposed to just following indexes.
Absolutely. And I'll give you a general, but, next week in our education segment, I will take an entire block of time again, because I've had multiple questions, and I know we're going to get multiple more because of what happened last year with the S&P versus any other index and certainly versus any diversified portfolio. Let me just at least answer that part of the question. But if you can, listen to the beginning of the second hour next week. I will go into great detail because, I just didn't have time today. But that's on our agenda to really break it down and break some numbers down and compare some indices for you. And if this doesn't do the trick, I also want to refer you to our website. I've got a podcast that we talk about a lot of different indices, and it's right on our website, separated out. Why is my portfolio not performing as well as the market? And I break down a lot of the indices from a show I did in December, okay? But let me say this. The S&P is only one index. It is really the S&P 70. The 70 biggest companies dominate that index. It's how are the gigantic companies based only in America doing? Not small cap, not mid cap, not even the 150th largest company in the country. It's U.S.-based only, and it's a gigantic company. So a quick example, since Apple is roughly double the size of the second biggest company, it takes up twice as much of that index as the second biggest company. So really, the bottom 400 companies in the S&P 500 don't even matter, okay? So it's a very, very narrow index, but we will dive into more detail later. And the fact of the matter is, if you look at the broad index, the overall market went up about 3 to 4% global, a diversified global portfolio, 3 to 4% last year, not 13 or whatever the S&P was, okay?
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, we'll talk again. We'll dive into it more next week, Steve. Thank you. All right, our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Dell in Weezer. Dell, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Dale.
I've been listening to you pretty much regularly since I moved over here 18 years ago. And as a generality, I really have not had much of a argument with your primary thesis that buy and hold is the best strategy.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some caveats to that, I believe. Once in a while, things come along where you can see an event either going to come or that has happened that has changed the value of one stock or another. And I'll say John Deere for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have had John Deere stock about 12, 14 years ago when suddenly corn jumped from $3 to $9.
Right.
But right now, John Deere is just another one more company. And so that would have been a real point where you could have jumped in, wrote it for 5-10 years or so, and then got out at a pretty good profit.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is when some external event happens, like there was a power company down in Arizona that was building a nuke plant, and Three Mile Island blew up. The stock in that plant just dropped precipitously.
Right.
But anybody knows that a power company is going to come back and make profits. So, you know, when that buy at the low level and as it got back up to regular earnings and regulation by the state authorities, then it's no longer a real big value to jump into.
Right.
But anyway, those are just the idea that as a generality, buy and hold, be always aware that there are some times like Micron in 2009, you know, $2 a share. Well, no,
I know. We're very happy about our Micron.
I'm going to buy a bunch now. I don't know what it's about, $28, $29.
A little over $28, yeah. That's actually.
So anyway, you know, I think you always have to be aware that there are some opportunities. But,
yes.
But the main reason I called, like I said, I've listened to you for 16 years, or 18 years rather, and you're primarily buy and hold, and with you're always kind of with the concept of growing that investment. But
right.
Then when you reach 80 years old, like I am now, suddenly you begin to recognize the reality that you can't go through another 2009. You know,
And well, so you can actually, but we'll talk about that one another time. But
what I was getting at, though, is that I think you need to spend some time perhaps just taking on the general concept that when you are ready to back out of the market, you know, try to come up with a strategy that that would help somebody like myself to be thinking about as I sell certain items. So.
Now, that I certainly think is a very, very good point, and I will do that. That's a great point. How do we structure, as people age, how do you structure your portfolio differently, or do you? Or do you? Is another interesting question.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that
so I will. And those are good examples, and I'll address those a little bit here in a moment, too. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Dell, thank you. I thank you, and thank you for listening for 18 years. I very much appreciate it. Thanks.
You bet. Bye.
Have a good day. Thank you, sir, for calling in. And our number is 580-KIDO. I will attempt to answer a couple of those questions, but I'm way behind on getting a break in. So I will talk a little bit about trading stocks, whether you know, whether you should be, or when you should be selling, I should say, as Dell was asking. And we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk.
Hey, hello and welcome, and thank you again for joining us. Again, if you missed John in the first hour, be sure to catch that in the on our website. Podcasts will be up. They're usually up on Tuesdays on our website. Also, you can obviously get them through iTunes or iStore, whatever it is. App Store. I can't think of what I'm trying to say here right now. But anyway, you can sign up and they'll automatically download as well. But a very interesting perspective, I think, from the MIT lab. I mean, just the brightest minds of where we're going on aging, which is phenomenal. Just it's very, very interesting, the science, the technology. And it does make you stop and think, right? What's right with the world, right? So I'm looking at this little, beautiful little girl, right? Just barely can move, right? She's now like 1 month old, and so... You know, completely helpless, thinking this little girl could live way past 100, way past, as a normal life expectancy. Really incredible. Think about the science. And we talk about what the Apple Watch is going to do for, it's not just the Apple Watch, it'll be all the apps that come with it, you know. There'll be hundreds of them, but with this new health kit, they're already linking people up. It's just an amazing thing. What's going on out there. Now, what do we do when we're talking about stocks? Dell brings up a great question. You know, do we buy and hold forever? Well, Warren Buffett seems to, but I don't totally agree with that. I think that there are times when companies aren't as good. And although Coca-Cola is a great example of a phenomenal investment for Warren Buffett, and you can certainly, it's certainly been great even through the downturn, but there does come a time where maybe, you know, for example, the world is shifting away from sodas. Sodas are not good for you. They just simply aren't. I don't care if it's, quote, a diet one or not. It's not healthy at all. Are there alternatives? You know, I want the carbonation. I want the bubbles. Great. I want caffeine. Great. But now there's a lot of alternatives out there, and even if people want a soda, they're sticking with, like, one soda. They're not sticking with a bunch. And so are there times when you should consider selling? And I think that's absolutely true, when there are times you can consider selling because a company, especially companies, change. Now, one example that Dell gave, of course, was Deere. And I think you have to be careful with these types of analysis as well, because we forget about valuations. See, the time to buy is when a company is really cheap and everybody hates it. In other words, the outlook is poor, not good. Because if the outlook is good, it's not cheap, period. I mean, end of discussion. I don't care what metrics you put it against. Oh, the P.E. ratio relative to, you know, another company that's even more loved, it's cheap. Okay, relative to another one. Relative to Jeff Dahmer, I'm a saint, okay? But I don't really think I'm a saint because that's kind of a really low bar to jump over, right? Okay, so it's the same type of thing. You can't out there cherry pick a few companies. Apple, for example, we talked about before, it's not cheap because everybody knows how great the story is. Okay, but it's also heavily doubted, so maybe somewhere in between, but not to say it's cheap. It's not. It's not cheap. Doesn't mean you should sell. But when you're talking about a company like Deere, where, oh, I don't know if I want to own it now. Now is when you really want to be looking at a purchase of it because it is cheap. Because nobody likes it. Nobody talks about it. Caterpillar, another one. Yeah, we're not gonna dig for any kind of iron ore or anything anymore. No more mining. Look at the price of those companies. They're not gonna buy any more equipment. That's when companies get cheap. And that's when you're thinking patiently long-term as an investor, okay? Final point. Dell, you make a very good point. How do we think about getting out if you're aging? I don't. I actually don't. I think I'll keep holding stocks because I don't think you time it. And I think especially as you look in a world like today, and the world may look different in the future, right, where you might have higher interest rate. You could earn enough, say, on bonds that you would be fine, probably, right? If you're 98 years old and in bad health, you'll probably die before inflation eats you alive. But if you're only 80, come on, man, you might have a long time to go. And besides, the dividends of the great corporations of the world are far higher than anything you could find at a bank, even if you tied the money up for a ridiculous amount of time. But what about the prices? What about 2009? Prices are temporary. Value is permanent. If I am receiving ever-increasing income called a dividend, what do I care about price except when I buy and when...
Hello?
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's place to talk. So, on 580 KIDO, Idaho's place to talk.
Hello, welcome, and thanks for joining us. 580 KIDO, and also Dave at PetzelFinancial.net. We're in our final segment today, of course, but you can email me any time. Let's go quickly to Jim. Jim, I've got a couple minutes there, buddy.
Dave, quick note. I thought I'd get through this entire program without calling you.
You just couldn't do it, huh?
Anyway, yeah. I'm getting tired of people putting down Coke. I mean, Coca-Cola has been around since, you know, it's Americana, and everything in moderation. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, what is good for us? The automobile is not good for us. Let's face it.
I agree, Jim. I'm just saying it's a secular trend. I'm not beating up on it. I'm just saying it's just a fact.
But
I'm beating up on a beer company that people shouldn't overindulge. I am not beating up on Budweiser.
True. Now, okay, granted, I will say that beer is healthier than Coke. I mean, barley, malt, water, everything in moderation.
And joy. Joy comes with beer, too.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. But, I mean, it's good that they're not putting down Pepsi, because that would mean that Pepsi is doing better than Coke, so.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Well, anyway, let's see. I guess there's no. I like your metaphor about earlier about us older dudes being not part of the hive and not being worker bees anymore.
Right.
That's true.
It is true. It is, and I I do worry about that for our healthcare system, but I also believe technology will be the great solver of that problem. And business. I should say it's technology and business, because business is the one that drives the technology with investment.
Well, even with technology, everything in moderation. We still need humans. I mean, in the medical deal, it's hunky-dory to have computers, but there's still a human element that's necessary to help the person heal.
I agree. Jim, I got to go. Have a good weekend. Everybody, take care.
Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzl Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional and an investment advisor representative with Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. Registered representative securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisor representative Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated and Pezzo Financial Consultants are not affiliated companies. These are the opinions of Dave Pezzo and are based on information from sources believed to be reliable but may change as information changes or becomes outdated. Nor should any opinion contained herein be construed or considered as a solicitation to buy or sell any particular investment product. Indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. Asset allocation and diversification strategies cannot fully guarantee against loss. The past performance does not guarantee future results.